Yeah, so my mother is from, she's from the baby boomer generation in the U.S. She's from Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. She was a first generation Christian. And my dad, he is a first generation Christian also. He was from a Taoist ancestor worship background family. So he's a Singaporean Chinese. My mother's a Polish American. So they lived in Asia. My mom lived in Asia for 40 years. So she speaks Chinese. She spent most of her life actually in Asia.
Okay, that's quite fascinating that your mom spent that much time over there as an American. That's probably not that many people that do that. So that's pretty cool. And I'm curious, as a child, what life looked like for you. So I don't know where you live. Maybe you can talk about where you were born and things like that, how it worked and how your relationship with your parents was at a very young age.
Yeah, I grew up primarily in Asia. So I was born in Taiwan. My parents were doing work over at Taiwan. I was in Taiwan for only a couple of years. I don't remember it. And then from there, went to Singapore. So my Singapore side, they're very traditional Chinese, and they're very strong in their Chinese values. And that's not my parents' family. That's why my dad's side of the family, they worship the ancestors. So ancestor worship is very strong, especially among what we call the Hakka Chinese. So I don't know if you know about Chinese people, but we have like different dialects that are broken down and people groups.
Okay.
So there's many different dialects, for example, that we have, like Mandarin, for example, is one mm-hmm. dialect. But we have many different dialects of Hokkien, Cantonese, Teochew. Many different guys. So we're from the Hakka people.
Okay.
And the Hakka people, a lot of them migrated from China to Southeast Asia. They came in as the workers when China was going through war. They came through down from Cambodia, Malaysia, Singapore. And when communism came in, a lot of the people left, especially a lot of entrepreneurs. They went to Taiwan, they went to other places to try to get away, because they knew what was coming. So my grandmother is born in China. They're China Chinese, and they migrated down from Malaysia to Singapore. So in my household, even though I have an American mother growing up, you know, she spoke Chinese. My grandparents lived with me. So it was very, very strict, you know? and from a young age, you can see the order of how they respect the elders. So like when I come home from school every single day, the first thing I got to do after I take off my shoes at the front door is I got to go to my grandparents and I got to address them by their name. Akong is grandpa, Apua is grandma. And I got to go address them first. Then I got to go say hi to my parents, right? I say hi to my mom, say hi to my dad. And so this is what's expected. So we're always thinking about like family order, and this mm-hmm. is very, very important among Chinese people, especially traditional Chinese people. So in Singapore, when you're growing up, main focus is a study, right? We're waking up so early in the morning, and we go to school. We come back from school. We have tutoring. So it's not just like we have school and we come back home. It's like we have school, and then after school is done, we get sent to a different location and we're under more study. So sometimes it's very normal in these parts of Asia, even right now, to study for sometimes 8-10 hours a day. It's just you are just completely under an academic focused society. Very, very, very important. But it was hard though. It was difficult for me, you know, growing up, because I wasn't, my brothers were super smart. My older brother is very, very smart. And in Chinese culture, the oldest son, they call them the little emperor. You know, every Chinese family, they want to have a son first. And actually, a little fun fact is, like, you know, they you know, we, the Chinese, we follow a separate calendar. right? Mm-hmm. It's like a lunar calendar. So the years are a little bit different every year depending on the moon. And so the days are a little bit different, but also in the years, they also kind of go by a zodiac calendar, okay, right? With different animals. So they want the suns to be born on the year of the dragon because they think it's a year of prosperity. So Chinese people, they'll try to have kids, sons especially, in the year of the dragon, you know? So a son is very important to a Chinese family because they're looked at as the ones that's going to be the leaders of the family. They're the ones that will take on the inheritance. So my older brother got a lot of attention, but he was also smart at school. I didn't do good in school, and I'm the second son. So I think a lot of things kind of got missed when I was growing up. But one thing I realized was I was very challenged academically.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about this because I'm curious how it worked for you in a culture that is so focused on studies, on academia. And I've heard of people that lived in China or that were influenced by Chinese culture, and they talk about that being a big weight. How was it for you as a child that was struggling in school?
It was very difficult because when you're in school, the back in that time, the teachers had the right to even get physically, you know, verbally they're abusive, but they could even physically, you know, like hit you, you know, they ridicule you in front of the class or even the school. I remember in my school, it was called Bukit Panjang Primary. This was in Singapore. And I remember every single week they would have a disciplinary teacher. And once a week, and there was hundreds of us, we would sit down, right, on the court before class would start. And once a week, the disciplinary teacher would take a student that was under discipline, bring him in front of the whole school, and would they call them cane them. They would cane them. It was a bamboo stick. You know, and you could bend these things and they're not going to break. And they would just start smacking these kids, you know. They do it for several reasons because shame is very big to Asian. You know, they want to punish you, they're going to shame you because to them, that's like the ultimate, they call it losing face, you know, like just going to, it's really being shamed to your name. And that's what the hell they use to punish you. So, and they do it publicly, you know, so like it was an example for all of us. That education is very important. And if you're not in line, we're going to make an example out of you. So the pressure was big. And I wasn't able to read and write. You know, I was dyslexic. And back then it wasn't studied enough and they didn't really know what to do with me, but they knew I had an issue. And I just remember like going on in the years and thinking I see my siblings, they're understanding how to read, how to write, they're getting the books. And when I would open a book, I don't know what is going on. I'm just seeing a bunch of letters and words, but my mind could not articulate what was going on. I just could not process it. So the teachers, they're looking at me like, dude, this kid's an idiot. And that's how I felt. And I just thought, wow. So the insecurity of academics, it was almost kind of a mix of trauma.
Yeah.
Together, you know, it was a place that like, going to school, I did feel the shame because there was many times I was called out in front of my classmates. And I remember even as a young boy, I remember like, wow, 6, 7 years old, just really crying in front of all my classmates because I didn't know how to read. I didn't know how to write. I had an issue, but they saw it as, you know, you're not trying. So I really felt like insecure in this area.
Yeah. I want to ask, how was it with your father? Because your father was Asian. I don't know if you said Chinese specifically. I think you did. But how was it at home? Because typically the parents also are very hard on the kids. So how was your relationship with your dad from a young age?
Yeah. You know, my dad, like I said, he's first generation Christian. And if you talk to many, many Chinese people in my generation, that there's a disconnection culturally, and it's very accepted to not really have an emotional nurturing relationship with the children and the father. I saw that in my own house with my father and my grandfather. It's respect. It's you know, it's kind of like about order, but there's no intimate relationship as far as like how are you doing in an emotional level. So I didn't have that with my father. My father didn't have that with his father. And so when I got back home, it was going to a place of order and rules, but there was no emotional connection mm-hmm. with my dad, you know. And he also had a big anger problem. Very big anger problem. So the way he would correct is he would just get violent, you know. And I was very scared of him. I was very scared to go back home because there was no teaching and instructing. It was you don't do. You do wrong, you cross the line, then you're gonna get beat. And it wasn't like a a gentle spanking, you know. It was like you're gonna get tossed around, and that happened quite a bit. So I had a lot of pressure going to school. I felt insecure going to school. I hated going to school. And when I went back home, I also hated going home because I felt like there was almost like no refuge, you know.
Yeah,
and this was very hard. And because you're so young, you know, everything is new to your life. And because everything is new, you think it's normal also, mm-hmm. because you can't differentiate what is normal, what is not. So my reality was going through very very high stress level at very very young age.
Man, that's horrific, because you go to school during the day, and then you get humiliated in front of everyone because of something you don't control. And then when you get back home, the same thing happens, and you get, you know, your dad gets violent with you. And like you said, no refuge. I feel so bad for you and for kids that are in cultures like that, that are trying their best, but they can't, like, somehow there's something that's happening, whether it's genetically or something else, and they're not able to succeed at the same level as other kids. And that's just horrible. But let's get further along in your story, because your life took a big turn when you turned 11 and you moved to New Zealand. Can you explain what happened when you moved there?
You know, we were in Southern Auckland, and Southern Auckland is an area called Mangere, and Mangere had a reputation, even to this day, I think, of being pretty hardcore, you know. Gang territory, you know, gangs was prevalent in that neighborhood. And I went to public school. I go to public school. Everything is different for me. Culture shock is different. You know, I'm seeing like graffiti everywhere. I'm seeing like in front of my house is like, you know, very often we see cars in the morning that got burned up at night, that were stolen. And when I go to school, I remember still my first day when I get to school. And I remember looking around these kids, and I'm Asian, you know, so we're small. And I'm seeing these other guys, and they're like the same age as me, but they're huge. You got Polynesian Islanders, you know, you got Maori people, Tongan, Samoan. And I remember going into class, and I remember it was still the middle of school, so it wasn't like a new year. And my teacher brings me to my desk, says, "You're going to sit here," then invites me to the front and tells the whole class, "This is a new student." And I remember as I walked back to my desk, oh my goodness, people just started saying all kinds of racial slurs to me, you know, like pointing at their eyes. And saying, you know, gook, a kink. And I actually, I didn't know those words meant, but I saw by the reaction of the other students that I was getting mocked on. And I actually had a guy next to me. He said, "Do you know what that?" And he had to explain to me what these words meant. And I just felt like I was getting crushed, you know, emotionally. I was getting crushed. And I could see the way the students were acting towards the teachers. It was not, there was no respect.
Hmm.
So I knew I was in a completely different world,
right,
from what I was used to. I thought, wow, the students are running the school and these kids are just going crazy. And the teachers have no order. There's no control. And this continued for some time, and just the mockery, all that was terrible. Going home was terrible. And I just remember just thinking to myself, dude, life is terrible. And you know, I grew up in a Christian family. I knew God. I really believe God was real. But I, at the same time, I felt abandoned by everybody. I felt like I didn't have the protection of my family. And I feel like I go to school and I'm getting ridiculed. And then there's a group that they started getting violent. And it was okay. For me, I just kind of kept my mouth shut. To be honest, I just took it, you know. But then when they started going after my younger brother, that's when I drew the line. And I remember going back home after my brother got beat up, and it was dinner time, and I told my parents, I said, they're beating up my younger brother. And I told my parents, I said, if they touch my brother again, I'm gonna fight back. And I remember my mom started laughing. And I just felt like she thought this was a joke. And I still remember that laugh, and I think that really hardened my heart even more. And the next day, before school started, I was with my younger brother. I told him, I said, "Listen, this happens one more time, you got to come to me. If these guys touch you one more time, you have to come to me." And sure enough, it was that day he was attacked, and he came to me and told me. So I went after the guy that attacked my brother, and I just started. I didn't know how to fight. All I knew is, like, my anger felt like it was like a volcano. And I couldn't speak, because at that time, I also had a speech impediment. I was going through speech therapy because I couldn't even speak properly. You know, like, I was really like a special ed kid, you know, and was so frustrated because I couldn't communicate. And I thought, the only thing I can do to help my brother is to get violent with these guys. And I did that. And that stopped these guys from being violent. After that, you know, with these same guys, we started a gang, you know, and that's how the gang life started for me, was actually trying to protect my brother. But then I saw that for once in my life, I have a little bit of control.
Hmm.
And that control, to me, it was like the first time I almost felt like a little bit of a resemblance of freedom, because I was able to communicate something that I wanted, and it controlled something, because my life was so out of control. I felt like my life was just completely out of control. And I gravitated towards that. And when I saw that these guys started to fear, and I was able to talk, I was able to talk with them and say, "Listen, like, we can kind of, you know, band together." And then, so I thought to myself that this is the kind of life I want to live. I want to live a gang life. So, yeah, that was in 11. That's how it all started.
So let's continue down that path of the gang life that you just talked about. Because it, you know, you were just 11 and just with a few people inside the school, but it eventually got a lot more serious. So can you explain how you entered kind of like organized crime? Because it's one thing to have like a small gang, but it's other different thing where we're talking about gangs that are part of organized crime. So can you talk about how you got involved with that and how that started for you?